RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Friday morning, I always look forward to our political panel because, well, it's just so interesting, it's fun, and we have great people on it. And this morning, we're kind of down one engine, that's another story. Two panelists this morning. I want to welcome Sandra Gowdy to the political panel at RCR. Hi, Sandra. Nice to have you.
Good morning, Paul. Great to see you this morning.
Thank you. Now, I hear that you have a large RCR sign. Where? Where?
It's in our front paddock on State Highway 25, so that everybody that's going travelling over to the eastern seaboard of the Coromandel can see it.
What's the volume of traffic? Fantastic.
Oh, look, huge.
Thousands.
Huge. Yeah? You wait. And, of course, I was delighted that we got it up before this coming long weekend because it's just bumper to bumper. So it's going to be great.
You're not going to send us an invoice or anything, are you?
No, I paid for it. It's my contribution to the cool. Wonderful work that you do.
Oh, thank you. Nice to know that you're there with us. Remind us, Sandra, of there was the mayoralty and I think Parliament. Give us a quick reminder.
Well, I've had at least 35 years of being in local government and or national politics, so right. Involved in national politics. So, but for me, it's 35 years of serving the community, basically, and loved every minute.
Wow, you must have seen quite a bit of stuff in that time,
yep.
Every combination.
Yep, that's why I won't write a book.
All right. Well, it was nice to have you this morning, and thanks for the sign. It's fantastic. Marty, have you got a sign out on your front lawn for us?
I live in a very low traffic volume cul-de-sac, so there's a limit to how much exposure you'd get for it.
But, well, on a rainy day, there's an umbrella. You can use that. There's the cap. There's the T-shirt. There's the hoodie. There's the number plates around. Have you got that one?
I tell you what, I do wear the hat everywhere, and I get these kind of almost Freemasonic kind of nods. You know, people are a nice hat. You know, probably about one person in.
That's code for. Yeah, I'm with you, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
You would hope anyway.
Oh gosh, we'll have a secret handshake soon.
Hey, that's an idea. We could sell access to it. Foundation Member Club. All right, great to have you both here. Let's launch straight into it. There's a lot to talk about, but this one. After the chat we had yesterday, Marty, yesterday morning. Get this. Te Pāti Māori declares it's setting up its own parliament. They've issued a declaration of political independence, Te Ngako o Te Iwi Māori, beginning the process to establish its own parliament. There are a couple of quotes here. Enough is enough, thus saying. We will no longer let decisions made by this house determine our oranga, the oranga of our people, our moko puna, the land, and Te Iwi Māori katoa. We now begin the process of establishing our own parliament. Our people will design what it looks like for us. Nobody else. Mm. Wow. Wow, eh?
Oh, does that mean they're no longer going to be putting their hand out for any benefits or participation in the funding that comes from taxpayers, people like myself? I'd be happy not to fund anything.
Yeah. Well, and equally, I'm happy for them to have a go, why not, like, take on, you know, a town first and see how you go? You know, do a bit of crawling before you can walk. But, you know, I've always had a bit of an interest in the Swiss canton system, which is the way Switzerland dealt with having a lot of different ethnicities and said, oh, well, you know, you have your own places and I guess we'll compete to see who can get the most people to invest there and move there. So maybe
on their own land, they own.
Yeah.
Actually, not too dissimilar to what the Queen Victoria had in her royal charter of 1840, sorry.
Well, that's a big misunderstanding of Tino Rangatiratanga, isn't it? I think Queen Victoria thought it meant an Englishman's home is his castle. The aspirant chiefs think it means we still, you know, get to... be a chief of anyone who's got a quantum of Māori blood. That is what Tamihiri said. You know, soon you won't be ruling these people, we'll be ruling them.
Okay.
There's not much of a chance of this happening, yet it sort of joins with it's quite aggressive.
Well, I mean, they can make it happen and along the same lines as the Masonic Lodge or the Lions Organization.
No, but they're thinking of something bigger than that is what
they're trying to say. No, well, of course, it can't be much bigger than that because we have a parliament by royal decree. And so so they're still going to have to operate within New Zealand laws and they're probably going
really?
To have to register. So I don't really know. So I'd be interested to see how they think they can make that work. So I'm with Marty on this about seeing where this will go. So good luck to them. Big yawn from me.
Yeah, are they going to be able to subpoena all the Maori MPs and National and ACT and New Zealand First? And they say, oh, you know, you're going to have to come into our parliament.
No, they can't
now.
Because, in actual fact, the Waitangi Tribunal does not have the authority to do that when it comes to legislation or regulation changes by government. They don't have within their legislation. They can only participate when they're invited.
So you don't get to set up your own parliament. It doesn't come off. You'll blame whoever for that not happening, and then that's something else. To ratchet up the tension another couple
so
of
how
notches.
How are they going to fund it? They're going to ask their people well, for money.
Forget that it will
and
happen.
And pay themselves.
How will you use this when it's not going to happen? You know, I mean, that's what we were talking about yesterday, Marty. You know, it ratchets up this division, this sort of, this line, this division that angry young men with, you know, thousands of gang members available might start to really kick off. I'm worried.
Well, yeah, maybe we will become like Switzerland. Maybe, you know, I can see if I can get Papa Ma to be its own state and, you know, we can have gun ownership and the death penalty for murder and, you know, a few things like that.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a case of let's see what they do. And I don't think anyone's going to tolerate the sort of aggressive behaviour.
New Zealanders are a bunch of felines.
Well, I think
look
we're
what happened
down
the last 3 years. Look what happened. The felines, they rolled over. They don't want confrontation. They're scared. They live a life of fear.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're getting down to the canvas now. I think ordinary New Zealand, you know, they're looking at Maori stats around crime, education, productivity, as well as the way, you know, they feel disrespected by the aspirant feudal lords like John Taimaheri and Willie Jackson. They're thinking, these guys have already got too much in the way of power over me. And that's where the appetite, you know, for some of the changes that are being protested yesterday at the budget have come from. You know, these guys haven't figured out you catch more wood pigeons with honey than vinegar.
Thank you for reducing it to that. I can understand that when you put it like that. Well, a rugby analogy would have been better, but okay.
And I think, you know, the negative reaction non-Maori have to this kind of perpetual demanding, protesting, denigration of their ancestors and nation isn't racism as Te Pāti Māori, you know, and their pasty, pencil-necked, spotty Marxist bedfellows in Labour and the Greens like to say. It's the visceral reaction that people with a proud history of abolishing slavery and deposing tyrants have when they're treated as if they're slaves by people who act like they would like to be tyrants.
All right, so let's leave
it. Wow, that was a long one, but I loved it.
We've solved it all. We just solved it in how, 5 minutes? No problem.
As I said, big yawn, let's watch that space.
Okay.
I think it'd be interesting to see how they think they're going to pull it off.
Well, I mean, the first civil war is going to be, you know, interesting.
No, I don't think that's...
I'm talking about within that state.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'm minded, actually, of Eva Rickard doing this at the Raglan Golf Course, if you recall. Many years ago, she set up an independent state there.
Yeah, there's always been a fringe of it, and they kind of
capital
you know,
was the ninth hole.
Anyway,
sorry, Marty, I jumped in over top.
Yeah, there are always a few fringe attempts to declare Maori governments and things like that, and you know that they're not really taken seriously by mainstream Maori, particularly the leadership, but they're kind of viewed as a useful thing to keep the pressure
on. You don't want 20-somes, 15 to 20-somes, who have been brainwashed into a way of thinking, can be violent, kicking loose in the streets.
See, this is really, actually, Martin, I think you hit on it really, the core point is that by keeping the pressure on, they can try and force the government to take it, to backpedal on redressing the legislation. Okay, So the core rule of New Zealand is through legislation, and legislation has to have clarity, has to be very simple, very clear. The problem that they've got, and this is where the vociferousness comes in, is because the government is now being quite clear about taking out references to the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi. But they have to, because there are none. There is no authoritative copy.
Well, how can you take out something that's not there in the first place? So that's that.
No, the reference to principles that do not exist. You take out the reference, and that's what Māori don't want. But for the efficacy of the law, you have to do it, because I got in writing from David Parker and from Chris Hipkins when David Parker was the Attorney General and Chris Hipkins the Prime Minister, that there is no authoritative copy of the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi, and that was in June of last year. I sent that to National, ACT and New Zealand First, so they were all very aware. And the Ombudsman's office asked me what I wanted to have happen, and I said, I want any reference to the principles to be removed, because it's given rise to a whole other raft of gravy train initiatives throughout legislation, and that's what they want to protect. That's right. What Māori want to protect, but it's there incorrectly. And so I think it's really important that for the clarity and the efficacy of the law that we have regard to the treaty, yes, but how can you have regard to principles that don't exist?
That's right. That's what I said. You can't remember.
And they love muddy in the water. You know, you've got Marama Davidson saying, oh, this is the most anti-Tiriti government, and, you know, they're wanting to abolish the number of people saying that, you know, that this government's trying to abolish the treaty is incredible.
Yeah, but that's to gin up aggro again. Anyway, let's leave that. Yeah. And let's go to the budget.
Oh, look, I seriously think that the coalition, I just love this current coalition government. It's just fantastic. And I just think they've done an awesome job on the budget, given what they had to work with. And that's what you have to remember. They had just a pile of rubbish with, honestly, Cam Slater and I talked about this. I felt that people should be taken to task under the Fiscal Responsibility Act. But the problem is there are no penalties for fiscal incompetence. And Labor is the arch perpetrator of fiscal incompetence.
Incompetence? Do you really think it's incompetence or willful?
A bit of both, actually. Mm. It's willful because under Michael Cullen's time, in his last term and his last budget, they spent forward. And so that means they spent everything in the coffers and everything coming, made sure that everything was ticketed going forward. And so there was nothing left for a number of years. I mean, Bill English did an amazing job. And so I think Nicola Willis and the coalition government have done an excellent job with what they had to work with. I'm up to page 179.
Wow.
So I can tell you more later.
Okay. What jumps out? Anything jumping out of those 174 pages?
I think there's a consistent theme of tidying up the ministries and ditching where there's sort of like your research or your advertising or different things like that, where it can go. But the other part of that theme is the emphasis on frontline services. So they're getting rid of a lot of that back work clogging stuff and putting it more into frontline services. And then quite a number of programs that are being ditched, thank goodness. The gravy train that's been involved in this last government of Labor's government, funding just nonsensical programs, has just been amazing. I've actually listed quite a number. I've got about half a dozen so far.
Okay.
I won't repeat them, but that's the core thing, is they're clearly getting rid of rubbish and putting it right where it needs to be, which is on the front line, and that serves us all. Every single man, woman, and child in New Zealand, to the best of their ability that they can do within current budget constraints. So big ups to them.
Well, I don't know about every man, woman, and child, because have you ever heard cows when they run out of water? The mooing. The mooing we've heard from
To the best of their ability that they can. There's always going to be people that miss out. I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, those with their lips around Squealer Robertson's spigot of gushing $90 billion have been quite something. Even in the lead-up, I heard Chris Hipkins in Parliament yesterday lamenting how the government was setting targets even as it was cutting funding, which is kind of the opposite of what he and Comrade Cindy did, isn't it? They abolished the targets and just randomly sprayed all this borrowed cash, and they still haven't really recanted that failed idea that money spent equals results, have they?
Well, you don't think they've done that in this budget?
No, I think I'm saying by they, I mean Hipkins and
Labor. No, they're classically bad.
They can throw their faces.
As Cam suggested, in the Fiscal Responsibility Act should be amended so they can no longer hold office when they're found to be in breach of the Fiscal Responsibility Act, and I think, which has now been absorbed into other legislation, but I still refer to it in the old way. And I think that's actually a very good suggestion. So I'm going to be putting that forward to the coalition, because I think they should be held to account for just gross fiscal incompetence.
Well, was it more vandalism?
Well, it's both.
It could be. It could be. I mean, it's got to be. They've got to start framing it as it is. It costs lives, because the money they've spanked could save lives.
That's right.
So there are people going to die because of what those Marxist student politicians did once they got given a credit card and spanked the hell out of it.
Yeah.
And created jobs for their mates.
Sandra, when you were talking about the back room as opposed to frontline services, that was really, because you're talking in the thousands there, those sorts of jobs, right? I mean, I think they're letting 2,200 go, but there's probably more in that line remaining. That's just an output for universities, isn't it? So you can guarantee
the backroom boys. Yeah, it's marketing, research, strategic positioning, all of that.
And it's a circular money system, right?
That's it. They get a job in there, and suddenly they need somebody else to help them, and
that pays the university.
Yeah. Right? If they're going to do something else, they should really index the pay that public servants get to the private sector, because it's really distorted the labour market. It's going to be really interesting to sit in on some of these interviews that some of these public sector guys have if they go into the private sector. It's going to be a shock to the system.
Yeah, but the jobs aren't there, perhaps. What do you reckon?
Oh, people, you know, there's a lot of things that someone with a background in public service could bring to the private sector. You know, they do have...
Yeah, but we're shrinking, mate. It's a recession.
Well, there's still people looking to hire good forklift drivers, conscientious people who can do the paperwork, fill in their logbooks.
Okay.
And professional people can still do manual labour. They can even actually change a career and do a trade.
Yeah, I mean, so much is wrapped up in it's a status thing. I mean, look at the arrogance of the university educated class of the last 3 years. They really think they're special. It's going to be a hard fall.
But I think that's where the falls need to be. The ones that I really feel for are your hardworking mums and dads that are struggling to make ends meet with a power price increase on the horizon and a lot of other increases as well. I mean, rate rises throughout the country are just going through the roof. And so every little bit just chips away at their meagre earnings. So I think the tax cuts are a bit of a bonus in that regard.
I think a large part of the problem with the way the media have failed us and just how this whole crisis has unfolded is the extent to which most journalists are functionally innumerate. They're really not good with numbers.
And that was another thing that came up when we were talking about the Fiscal Responsibility Act, is where for journalists and media to be much more accountable for what they're actually saying and telling us. And so if they were required to not use adjectives and have a reference to empirical data in regard to their subject matter, I think we'd see a whole different landscape of journalism.
I don't know if you get the clicks.
Well, I mean, if you go to, I mean, I did a paper a couple of years ago at university, and I was just astonished at the airy assertions in it with no references, no numbers, just this airy kind of, and this is in the textbooks and stuff, astonishingly poor scholarship.
Well, that's even in coming through from the interviews of people on the Hikoi. they ask them, what is it about the budget that you don't like? Oh, doesn't recognise tertiary. So what is it about the budget that you don't like? You know, like, I don't think any of them could tell them.
They can't. And that's what the leadership class wants. They want uneducated, ignorant tutua or commoners. That suits them just fine.
So I don't know who you're referring to then when you say the leadership
class. I'm talking about those people who are asked why they were there being all angry and turning up in support of... I'm talking about the people who will protest but not know what they're doing.
Oh, right. Okay.
Might not even know what the budget is.
Yeah, got no idea. They just be told, hey, be angry.
Well, it's protecting the gravy train, isn't it?
With your little troops.
The budget is the gravy train.
Yeah.
And they've got to protect it.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of money going through. And so.
Is that why they're squealing?
Oh, I'd say to some degree, absolutely. Yeah, totally. Okay. Because if you start to take away the money from, say, organisations like Te Arawhiti, which was created under Labor by Calvin Davis, for no real justification, because they've got Te Puna Kōkiri and a few other Māori entities and governance bodies in there, or they did have. And so they created this Te Arawhiti. Whether it's true or not, I did hear something through the grapevine that there was about 200 people employed and all sorts of things going on. And, of course, they're meant to be managing a budget for the claims of the foreshore and seabed. Well, they can't even do that. I mean, I don't know if they've actually heard of a spreadsheet so that when they're allocating money for all of the things that they had their funding given to them for, they should have been doing an analysis as they went of what was left. What they're allocating versus what was left in the sum total of the funds available, and they didn't. So what are they, what, 30 million overspent or something? Oh, crazy. Dear. I mean, that's part of what I see as part of the gravy train.
Isn't it amazing you can just grab 30 mil? Oh, well, I've got an idea. Give me 30 million. All right, okay, yeah, here it is.
Well, because they can claim money for three people, for hui, court proceedings, an applicant, a legal counsel, experts and witnesses, travel of any sort, and meals and accommodation of any sort, and koha. So, I mean,
it's the little tax on the top, the koha.
I think I'll make a claim just so I can have a bit of a...
Yeah. The five facts you need to know from the first census. Results are in. What do we need to know from the census, do you think?
Oh, it's sort of interesting about the percentages, but, you know, when we're all living here equally, I mean, and equal under the law, what relevance does a percentage have in a census on ethnicity?
Is there any point in even asking, really?
Well, I'm not really sure. I don't actually think there is, to be quite honest. Why do they need to know?
Well, so we can have ethnic leaders, I guess. Thomas Sowell's got a great quote on that. He said, "The time is long overdue to stop looking for progress through racial or ethnic leaders. Such leaders have too many incentives to promote polarizing attitudes and actions that are counterproductive for minorities and disastrous for the country." It sounds familiar, right? It's an American, black American economist.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is a waste of time.
Well,
this is our population.
And not unless you want that data to do things that you would want to do.
It makes us easier to divide, which makes us easier to rule, I guess is one way to look at it.
Anyway, we found out we're aging.
We're aging, so it seems unlikely that I'm going to be in a free-range old people's home. It's going to be more of a battery old people's home, I guess.
Well, it could be a barn.
Okay, I could be a barn.
Barn chooks. There are barn chooks, remember?
It's like a halfway house.
I could be a colony pensioner.
Well, there are 100 chickens running loose in that village in England.
Oh, that's right, those feral chickens, yeah.
Exactly. So even within the minority worlds, there are variations.
Okay, so we knew we were aging. So big deal. Maori population is almost a million. That's the other one of the five we've found out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm a little bit sort of ho-hum. Yeah, really? Oh, well, okay.
But that's a wide sort of mouth of who is in that category, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Three parts of the South Island are quickly growing. That's because everyone's bailing out of the North Island.
And for good reason. And you can see, I mean, like, you only have to go down there and visit and spend some time down there. It's just fantastic. I mean, I was born in Roxburgh, so I mean, I love the South Island, but here I am living in the North.
RCRHQ's yeah. moving to Queenstown.
Oh, well, yeah. Of course.
Born in Dunedin.
Nothing like picking the cheapest place in the country to live.
Apparently it's the lowest disposable income city in New Zealand.
Is it really?
Well, that's what a councillor told me because they, you know, struggle with the rates.
Well, yes, because they have about, I remember Jim Bolt telling me they have about 100 abandoned cars a year and they start from Auckland and then they just abandon them in Queenstown and you've got about 30 tourists per ratepayer that have to be looked after.
Oh, really? Okay, that's how it adds up, right?
The whole thing is completely out of whack in terms of being able to look after the infrastructure for a small place like Queenstown for the multitudes that visit.
I get the impression that the South Island is more kind of conservative, you know, with maybe a small C, and a little more thinking, but I don't know why I think that.
Well, more honesty boxes in the fruit stalls.
Oh, okay. Well, that's how you can tell. Probably.
But it is. They are much more conservative, and I think they are. They think quite deeply, but they've got a much more relaxed attitude to life as well. But they're not hassled the same by. It's sort of almost an atmospheric thing in the north.
Yeah.
Difference. You can almost feel it. It's almost
the powerful. Volcanoes versus the Alps.
Right. Okay. There'll be some legend stories behind that.
The earthquakes will be the same.
Well, no, they're scaring us with the 9 on the Alpine fault, you see.
Yeah.
All right.
It's magnificent, the South Island. So, yeah, I don't blame you for going down there.
Mind you, from what we heard about that that festival gathering, you know, the anti-conspiracy people we heard back from, what was the name of it? It had Susie Ferguson and it was supposed to have Kate Hanover. She didn't turn up and the other mad guy and Catherine Ryan. The report was that 98% of those there were just buying the whole thing. So, but maybe it's not.
Yeah. It's surprising, isn't it? You get used to sort of being around sane people. And now we've kind of sifted ourselves into the wheat from the chaff in terms of critical thinking. But they're still out there.
Almost half of Māori are rangatahi. That's young people, isn't it?
Youth. Yeah.
Okay, so we learned that from the census. Under 25 years old.
Yeah.
And well, how much they really appreciate or understand or know.
Well, who knows? But that's a faster birth rate, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they said that. That was some of the commentary that came out about how they're having more children, et cetera. But it's not improving the stats, is it?
No. It's adding numbers, though. Wellington, this is the big one, number 5. Well, I suppose number 1 is the big one. Number 5, Wellington City is shrinking, which is strange, apparently. I don't think it's strange if a lot of people are losing their jobs.
Well, and there are people in Wellington probably listening to this, so I won't be too hard on it. But I used to live there, and I remember walking down to catch a plane to Sydney to go and spend my birthday with a mate of mine who had a similar birthday.
Walking down from where, Marty?
I was walking down from away from Parliament. I lived on Tinakori Road.
Oh, okay. Oh, you'd
and
get
it was
down,
windy and raining, and there were all of these overweight bureaucrats. Well, a lot of them were women.
Gliding on.
Buzz cut haircut. Looking miserable. And it was just.
With their lanyards.
The plane. I landed in Sydney and everyone was slim and tanned and nice looking and looked happy. And I thought, you know what? This is better. So I moved there.
All right.
So where are you living now, Martin?
I'm living in New Zealand's Florida, Sandra. I'm Papamoa.
So you came back.
Yeah.
That was once New Zealand's fastest growing suburb.
Yeah.
Hey, can I just ask around Wellington? So you were saying that the population in Wellington's shrinking.
Yeah. And they're saying it's strange.
Have government departments started to relocate into outer-lying areas? Or
as they should.
Wait on. I should have read further. This is germane. It is stagnating. The population, don't get too excited, folks, says here, the population of Wellington City declined by 48 people between 2018 and 2023 census night. So I don't know. Maybe it's strange that there's hardly anyone.
Oh, what? I mean... See how data is quite important to actually clarify the narrative.
48 people. That's like margin of error. Or people who got lost or something.
Oh, what? It's a crisis, I'm telling you, Paul.
Okay. I think we've got to bail out of that one. All right. Okay.
I mean, it's just they turn everything into a crisis just to garner public attention.
Yeah.
No matter how minimal the stats might be in regard to what they're talking about.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
That was a stuff story, just so you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Rightio.
It may have been written by AI. Who knows?
Yeah, New Zealand's media landscape under stuff is the Sunday Star Times at the weekend was just a whole lot of very, very far left columnists. It's going to be, I don't think it's going to get better with them doing the news on 3 or anything like that.
The trouble is, though, that census was all over the show, wasn't it? And people weren't filling it in.
I got
five knocks on the damn door. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? You know, and they all had their little, you know, iPad there with all the information on. And some of the questions, I can't remember exactly what they were, but, you know, you sort of feel silly answering them.
You know. So would you question the validity of the real authenticity of the data that they collected?
Probably not, you know, in terms of whatever the percentage of error could be through that. But, you know, I don't think people are such a fan of the census anymore.
Well, they aren't. Most of them like to tell them to naff off.
Yeah, particularly this last one.
I tried not doing it one year. I pushed the envelope as far as I could.
Yeah. What, into the post box? Well, I answered with spaghetti monster.
Isn't that like the dog control officer? Sort of stuff. When he thought I was going to run him over, he decided to leave.
Why did he think that? Were you coming at him like?
No, I wasn't. I was just leaving myself. But
man,
okay. I let him think that.
I'm lucky this is on Zoom.
I don't care. It's all right. I'm not worried about that.
But I couldn't think of what. You know, where does the dog catcher? Did you say?
Dog controller.
Are they popular in the community usually?
I wouldn't know, to be quite honest.
Yeah. He might just assume every car coming towards him might be.
I know he was on our property.
Oh, where the sign is.
I just got a bit fed up with him. No, another property. This was some years ago when I was a bit feistier.
Oh, really? Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah, we're going pig hunting tonight.
All righty, what else have we got?
No, I'm serious, actually.
No, I took you seriously. That's why I didn't react.
No,
that's something she'd do.
Knife between your teeth?
Pardon?
Knife between your teeth?
No. Actually, I'll be looking after the kids while hubby takes little Frank up the hill. And the pigs have been coming out, so he's caught a few this winter so far. And we caught four little live piglets as well, so they're being reared at the moment.
I see that they're trying to get clear 90,000 hectares of pigs as a concession for mining that extra $6.5 billion worth of gold. Are there any concerns about that?
Pig for gold deal.
Mm. No, I'm not concerned at all.
Oh, is that the tunnel mine?
Yeah.
So it's underground mining, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I'm not concerned. And you can see the old 20 old faithful out there with their placards every
20.
Time.
That's about that. Half of the number of people who've left Wellington in the last 8 years.
Oh, good point, Paul.
Maybe that's where they went. That's
where there's some serious opposition there, I can tell you.
Oh, well, one of them was Catherine.
Yep, nice blowing in the wind.
All right.
Had to be.
Court's not sticking to core legislative criteria in granting ownership based on customary arguments. Who wanted to? Sandra,
That in there because. That's what's happening with Te Ara Whiti. They're funding Māori to be able to take claims for foreshore and seabed through Te Ara Whiti. And the money's just pouring out the door. That's why they're blowing their budgets. And I, as a taxpayer, I totally strenuously object to that. I think it's absolutely abhorrent. But the one that really knows the most about that is Muriel Newman of NZCPR.
Yeah, we talked to Muriel quite a bit, yeah.
Oh, she's fantastic. And they take out they're taking court action in regard to this, because I seriously question the Crown, which is currently the Crown Law Office, the government, being able to properly protect our rights under the treaty and defending our rights to the foreshore and seabed. So any prejudicial bias in favour of a minority, in my view, is actually a breach of the treaty of the Treaty of Waitangi.
Okay.
Yeah, she's been fantastic. She actually wrote a great article on the 27th, so Monday. But yeah, the key sentence was, what these cases show is that once iwi manoeuvre themselves into positions of power, their demands are never satisfied.
That would be right.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, there are some pretty sobering stories about the demands that the Mahuta family have made for the Waikato, you know, billions of dollars coming out of power companies or extorted to appease Taniwha.
Gosh, they must be wealthy, eh?
But hang on, the problem is legislation created by the government, successive governments, allows that to happen.
Yeah, so.
Allows blackmail to happen in the course of going about commercial activity. And so even
huh? There must be a payoff
never
for someone.
Never voted
there.
On either, is it? Never, no. It's never in the manifesto.
And this is where I just hope National has got the fortitude with the support of New Zealand First and ACT to stand firm and do what it has to do and change the legislative guidelines, change the Treaty of Waitangi Act, and make sure there has that changes every piece of legislation and have regard to the Treaty of Waitangi, but take out any reference to the principles. National's got to stand firm and do those things, there's a bit of a question around that in the face of the aggression and the vociferous nature of the radicalised few.
And I think Christopher Luxon, I always say this, you know, for all that he's a great businessman, meant to be a great businessman, he's not really internalised that features tell, benefits sell thing. You know, he's terrible. I mean, when he was asked about the protest, you know, whether the calls to strike yesterday were appropriate, he said, no, that's illegal. You know, it's kind of, you know, is that it?
Well, wouldn't you say, well, it's everybody's right to protest.
Yeah, well, that's what we have weekends for. I think it was the
only. Well, I just hope I'm not paying for any of them to be there.
Well, you will be. But, I mean, it's really important to keep emphasising that, you know, we've talked a fair bit about this. It's not anti-Māori, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of their concerns are shared by all New Zealanders about the state of education, the achievement of their kids, the incarceration rate.
The aggression is for the protection of the gravy train.
Yeah.
If the government changes the law and they're suddenly in a position that they can't go and keep putting their hand out.
Taps off, turned off.
Yeah. Right. So that's the gravy train. They're trying to keep protection of the gravy train, and it's got to stop because, quite frankly, taxpayers can't keep putting their hands in the pockets to the extent that they have to for local government, let alone central government.
Yeah, yeah. All right, just to finish up on something that we should include, I think, because it's been big news for us here at RCR this week, and it is political ultimately, and what's been going on at the World Health Organization. And, of course, we know what happened with the change of government and the various points in that coalition agreement. Apart from us, and I'm not trying to make us feel good, apart from us, I don't think there's been any reporting at all of what's been going on, yet it is huge, potentially.
Absolutely.
So, and there's been kind of crickets from the politicians, including New Zealand First, actually. They've been very quiet. So what do we make of that?
I sent out an email to all of the National Act in New Zealand First in regard to the World Health Organization, a sort of a last minute, just simple message about making sure they didn't sign and to continue to protect our rights and freedoms, because it's a constant battle. We all know that. And it's probably worse now than it has ever been, and I think it's going to get tougher. And so for them not to be actually saying anything, for nobody to be saying anything, it's just gobsmacking, really.
Because you've got our delegate over there who's the second in command of the health ministry, somebody Duncan, the
Sir
name,
Ashley.
A younger, kind of younger guy in his early 40s, maybe. Or if he's older than that, he's doing pretty well, health department. But anyway, he was fawning in the clip that we had from Geneva. You know, it sounded like full steam ahead. Okay, he's representing us. He's at the mercy of the government. How come he's allowed to say things? Why are we hearing from, you know, Winston or the health minister or somebody? I mean, this is huge. And we've got this guy who's allowed to say things and gets recorded, and, you know, voting for equity and we'll move this ahead. You've got Ashley Bloomfield accusing basically us of, you know, a misinformation, disinformation campaign, and who's going to be popping the champagne on Saturday, I heard him say. So they're allowed to say things, run their mouths. Where are our leaders who we voted for?
Mm. Well, I mean, the mystery isn't that pharmaceutical companies want the keys to world nation sovereignty. The mystery is how, as you said, Sandra, or I think Paul, you said it as well, how complacent people are about it and how unwilling they are to.
Yeah, but if they're talking about it, Marty, people would be.
Well, who advertises in the paper? You know, I mean,
Pfizer.
Tucker Carlson made this point. He asked some pharmaceutical company executive, why are you guys advertising on TV all the time? You know, does it really get people taking more drugs?
Because they can dictate the program.
Yeah, it doesn't get people taking more drugs necessarily, but it gets the networks thinking twice before they say things that we don't like.
Yeah, because leadership is that, isn't it, Sandra? That's what leadership is.
Leadership should be keeping people informed about what's happening, especially when your sovereignty is going to be threatened. Any decisions of the government are taken away from them by imposing conditions from unelected bodies on the other side of the world. And this is what the World Health Organization want. Some of the things within that, those World Health Organization regulations were just mind-bogglingly bad.
Yeah, on purpose.
Yeah, we haven't heard a thing. And then they could still do a number on our representatives and on our politicians.
Well, it sounds like they're up for it.
And coerce them into signing. This is, I don't know whether what action could be taken by an ordinary citizen, but talk of negligence.
Well,
as in T-O-R-T.
This is referendum stuff, even if at all. That you would put that, but you can't have it hinging on one guy who's sort of bedazzled by the whole thing.
Well, that's James Shaw.
If Māori was so concerned about sovereignty and all of those sorts of things, why aren't they onto it more than they are?
Because the Tamahiri family or the Waipariwa Trust made something like $40 million vaccinating their people.
$200 million available over 8 years.
I've heard the reason Hone Harawira has been so quiet lately is they made a poultice of cash doing it too.
Yeah.
Doing what?
Well, running vax clinics and getting elders to
$40 a dose
to go around. Oh, it was more than that.
The hard to get to $200 a dose.
In Gisborne alone, they had $6 million budgeted to vax Māori, the trophy was incredible.
Yeah.
Someone said, you know, the problem isn't that you can buy a senator. This is about America for $10,000. Yeah. The problem is that there's a process for eliminating senators that you can't buy for $10,000.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dear. Okay.
God.
All right. Well, sorry.
That's why I'm so glad I put up the billboard of Reality Check Radio.
That's why I'm so glad you put it up. I hope
that the more people that see that and tune in and actually start to read some of the messages, because it's only when good men and women do nothing that
shit happens.
Yeah.
All right. We're up against time. Been an interesting chat. Thanks for picking up the one who wasn't here. We won't tell you who that was, but there was a good reason for I was just about to give the gender for that person not being here. But anyway, we'll be up to full strength next week. Thank you, Sandra Gowdy, for coming on. It was great.
Thank you, Paul. Loved it.
And Marty?
Hey, thanks, Paul. And I've got to say, thanks for all the work you're doing, mate. You're just a dynamo at the moment, aren't you?
I only sit at the kitchen table.
Aren't you? Yeah.
I see people digging ditches and doing hard work. And here imagine I am sitting at the kitchen table talking.
Imagine what we could do with 5% of the funding increase that National Radio is getting.
Yeah, but we don't want it from there.
No, that's true.
I mean,
I have asked for a sum total of all the government spend on media, and then I'm going to ask for a sum total of all the government spend on,
good,
I think it will be Māori media.
Oh, yeah.
And Māori television. I'd actually ideally like spreadsheets. One thing during all that media analysis, I never saw any spreadsheets of budgets and costs and costings or anything about what the government was spending. And I would have thought that would be the first thing they would have looked at. But anyway. Well,
I was at RNZ, and when I was there, we were getting just under $30 million a year. Wow. Even then, I wondered how we spent it. And then they've had an extra, I think, 30 on top of that, or 25 on top of that. Tell me how you're going to spend that money. I don't know. Are you going to double the size of the operation? Well, that hasn't happened. Are you going to produce more services? Well, there's a few little more services. Where does the money go?
Are you going to get more listeners? Well, you've gone from number one to number 10. Or
I left and 30,000 people left. It was a coincidence, I think, more than anything, because people were having a guts full of the content at that point. They were starting to go off it. But seriously, you try spending $25 million extra. It's not easy.
I could have a go at it.
I did have a go at it last few nights, thinking $33 million for Lotto, you know, what? And I struggled to spend it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Give me a call,
you'd be surprised at, yeah.
So you get the extra money, where does it go?
I think that's what the government needs to pull together, obviously. And I think they've done a pretty good job. But I want to look more closely at the vote. Hey?
It comes from people's ability to invest in their businesses because of the tax burden.
It's a total transfer.
Yeah.
All right, gotta go. Great. Thank you, Sandra Gowdy, Marty Gibson. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.